Welcome to the Social Flight Live podcast, an audio version of our live show, hosted every Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern at socialflightlive.com. Social Flight is brought to you by Aspen Avionics, Avidyne, Bose Aviation, Continental Aerospace Technologies, Lightspeed Aviation, Massimo MightySat, Tempest Aero Group, and Whip Air. And now, here's your host, Jeff Simon.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Social Flight Live. We have a fantastic show for you this evening. JJ Friggy, president of Hartzell Propeller, is here. We're going to talk about so many wonderful things with this amazing company and hopefully teach you quite a bit about your propeller and what it means to you and maybe your next one as well during tonight's show. Before we get started, just a few things. Fall flying is absolutely booming inside of Social Flight. We have tens of thousands of aviation events and destinations, cool things to do, and also our destination digest. We've added thousands of destinations that you can fly to all around the country and the world, and all you need to do is go to socialflight.com and just look for them. They have ratings and reviews and photos. They have like indications as to whether a courtesy car is available there. Pretty much everything you can imagine. You can add your own favorite destination, and we also send out our Destinations Digest email with a sampling of things that are in your area. Some are local, some are a little farther, maybe 500 up to 500 miles away, and then a few really aspirational, wonderful ones on a national level. And so be sure to check all of that out on socialflight.com. And in addition to that, we also have our Fly to Win Challenge. And in our Fly to Win Challenge, you just get the Social Flight mobile app, get out there and fly. It gives you points, even for your home airport. You just check in once and you've got points to win. We just gave away a Lightspeed Delta Zulu headset. Our winner was Ryan Leeward of Lewisville, Texas. He flies a 1947 Stinson 108. He won that headset. Now we're giving away another one. And so again, all you need to do, get the app, get out there. Even if you check in once, you're entered. If you fly many times and get on our leaderboard, you can get additional entries to win. And also, as we approach the end of the year, we've got courses on our FAA Learning Center with Wings credits. If you're an AMP, you can compete or be part of our Aviation Maintenance Technician Awards program where you take courses towards that. Or if you're an AMP with an inspection authorization, you can get your 8 hours of recurrent training directly through Social Flight, all for free on your own time. Tonight's broadcast is brought to us by Whip Air and their amazing new Yukon propeller made by Hartzell that makes caravans on floats literally leap out of the water. It is really, really amazing. And in addition to floats, Whip Air offers nearly every type of service you can imagine, from maintenance to avionics, paint, and interior work. We visited their South St. Paul facility and factory many years ago and have a video about that. If you're ever in the area, coordinate with them, check it out. It is so cool to see all of that in action. Now to tonight's guest. As president of Hartzell Propeller, JJ Friggy is responsible for every aspect of the business, including the development and education of Hartzell's strategy and the way that they deliver on that commitment that Hartzell Propellers are built on honor. A veteran of over 13 years at the company, JJ understands how to provide quality products and outstanding customer support while ensuring the financial success of the company as well. And that can be very difficult to do in the specialized market we have here in general aviation. So it really does matter that these companies thrive and survive and that they can support all of us at the same time. He's active in the general aviation community as well as his local community as a board member on the General Aviation Manufacturers Association, past president of the United Way of Miami County, the Miami County Humane Society, and dedicating 15 years to coaching youth sports, which touches me personally. I've always been involved in coaching, and I really have quite a bit of respect for someone that dedicates their time in that manner. You always have to check out and take off from work in order to make it happen. And for someone at JJ's level to go and do that for youth sports is quite meaningful. JJ applies the lessons learned from sports in his leadership at Hartzell, how to win and lose with grace, determination, hard work, and what it means to be a team. As someone with years of experience with Hartzell propellers and the Hartzell team, I can honestly tell you that general aviation is a richer community for the work and leadership that JJ Friggy provides. I am thrilled to call him a friend, have him with us here tonight. Please welcome to Social Flight Live, JJ Friggy. Hey, JJ, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. How are you, Jeff?
Excellent. Thank you so much for taking time out of your evening to join us here on Social Flight Live. I know how busy you are.
You bet. I'm really thrilled to be here. I appreciate you having me.
Thanks. I want to lead off with something. We mentioned during the introduction, of course, that you're a board member on GAMA, and Pete Bunce, the president of the General Aviation Manufacturers Association, GAMA. We've been fighting this thing for the industry. You know, you do a lot of work for the industry. GAMA does a ton of work for the industry. And along with Mike Bush and AOPA and the work I've been doing and the entire group, Pete has really led a charge against something we've done a couple shows on here recently called the Moss Interpretation. And the Moss Interpretation really threatened how general aviation maintenance happens because it was redefining how supervision happened. That could have really completely stopped owner maintenance and how we do A&P training, just about everything that way. And I want to announce to all our viewers that literally 2 hours ago, we just received a letter from the FAA that will be public that you will start seeing tomorrow. And that letter reads in part after talking referring to the regulation in question, that they are issuing a stay of the Moss Interpretation, that the Moss Interpretation now is on hold. It does not represent a conclusion to this, but it will not be enforced until they have time to really go through this, hopefully along with the industry, and come up with a good thing. So a thanks to Pete, to the industry, to Mike Bush, to everyone who's worked on this, and thanks to you for your role on the board of GAMA as well.
Certainly, that's great news.
So I want to talk, of course, about your background in Hartzell. Hartzell is a remarkably historic company. I always knew that it was, but the more I dug into it, the more my mind kept getting blown about how far back this really goes and what impact in general aviation history Hartzell has had. Can you give me a few points that can, and then maybe I'll go through a couple I saw here?
Sure, be happy to. So you mentioned, actually Hartzell Propeller goes back to 1917. The Hartzell family was working a lumber mill in Piqua, Ohio, and their friends, neighbors down in Dayton happened to be the Wright family. So Orville Wright and company had just started the Dayton Wright Airplane Company. And instead of dropping out of university to go be a barnstormer, George Hartzell convinced his son, Robert Hartzell, to stay with the family business, stay in university, and start a propeller division in their lumber mill. So our first customer was Orville Wright with the Dayton Wright Airplane Company. And you know, we quickly got started with not just them, but also the World War I effort with some propellers for the military. And then, you know, fast forward into World War II, we did a lot of contract manufacturing for Hamilton Standard in support of the war effort with metal-bladed propellers, and then started to develop our carbon fiber composite technology in the mid to late 70s. And as we look at our portfolio today and really the company, it's really a story about innovation and continuing to kind of push the limits of material properties and how we can design better performing propeller systems that provide great value to customers.
And you know, one of the things I was actually really surprised at as I did some more deeper research into the company, I didn't realize Hartzell actually produced aircraft at one point. That back in, it looks like in the 20s, you had a couple aircraft?
We did, and we quickly decided, it was the FC-1 was the model, and we quickly decided we didn't want to compete with the rest of our customer base. Yeah. So we shut down the aircraft design and production and just focus on the propeller system design and production and obviously continue to take on customers and airframers.
It really is impressive. And as you look at some of the firsts, you've got things like a rigid airship propeller for the USS Shenandoah. But I also saw 1946, an aircraft that I happen to think is just so wonderful. When every time I see it at AirVenture, that Hartzell created the first controllable prop for the on the Ryan Navion.
Yeah. Yeah. If you can believe it, the Navion goes all the way back to the mid 40s and certainly controllable pitch, right? So we take it for granted now, but originally everything was fixed pitch, you know, not able to change pitch or have any sort of pitch change control system during flight. And that was our first system that we were able to control pitch and obviously maximize performance then as we go through the different phases of flight.
And I think one of the things that it's so revolutionary, the idea that you could essentially have gears on a plane, you know, that you change its pitch and control what you can do. But even that there was a period of time between 46 and then 49 that you could control the pitch, but it wasn't until 49 that Hartzell actually created the first T drive and governor to make it not just variable pitch, but constant speed.
Yeah, that's right. So really, combining the hydromechanical controls into a unit that would really hone in on a particular RPM, as you said, constant speed, and match up the pitch of the propeller blades to make that RPM consistent. So yeah, I mean, it was a great, you know, we call ourselves a propeller design company, but we're definitely intimately familiar with the control side on the prop governors as well.
Well, you sell governors as well, right? I mean, our the governor that we've got is a Hartzell. It actually comes from you. Yeah. And I think a lot of people don't realize the intimate connection between how your governor works and how your constant speed propeller works and how important it is, especially if you're doing an overhaul, that both of those are given the same start, kind of fresh, clean start. So you're not pointing at which ones have given me the problem.
That's right. Yeah, we obviously have a time between overhaul for our propeller systems. It's extremely important to follow those manuals and have those maintenance events done at overhaul cycle. And also same on the governor, to your point. So, you know, we recommend, you know, a standard TBO on governors as well, depending on the model. And certainly when you're taking your prop off to have it overhaul, it's a great time to have that governor come off and send it in for overhaul as well.
Yeah, I think I've written about this before in my OPA column, but I really sincerely believe it, that propellers are not given the due reverence that they really deserve and should command, because the forces that they're under, the what they actually do, the fact they are a single point essentially at the pointy end of the spear of potential failure if you don't care for it properly, and what they really mean to performance just cannot be overstated. So tell me a little bit about what goes into, on your end there at Hartzell, what goes into design and manufacturing and how you care for these propellers.
Yeah, it's a great observation. And, you know, to be honest, safety culture of our employees, you know, and how we work together is extremely important, as it is in every manufacturing company. But the safety culture around our product and what we're putting out in market is just as important in our case. You know, the FAA has a list of components and parts that they deem to be flight critical. And every component of a propeller is considered to be flight critical. It's a, you know, give or take 120 to 150 parts that go under a propeller. And, you know, many of them are moving at high speed, you know, under RPM with centrifugal force and loading. And so we've got to be, you know, really focused on the quality and safety side when we start our designs. So what's worked well for us is to have a core system, whether that's on the steel hub side with a steel hub, pilot tubes, and then clamps that bolt the blade, that affix the blade to the hub on the steel clamp, steel retention side, or on the aluminum clamps style shell system. We really have spent a lot of time honing the virtues of those systems and then just versioning those out. Because when you do a clean sheet, you know, you've got to look at your FEA, you've got to look at where your fault modes are, and certainly we do clean sheets as well. But really designing for safety and designing for manufacturability and repeatability and high quality is something that we really focus on every time that we are endeavoring to design, you know, a new system or version out a system that we already have. So I guess I would say every metal part that goes into a propeller goes through a non-destructive testing, whether that's an eddy current for steel parts or a powder coat black light process to look for cracks and blemishes on aluminum parts. You know, we build safety into everything that we do, from the design to the certification, which we can also do ourselves through our ODA that we partner with the FAA on, to the production, and then certainly the service and support side with our recommended overhaul cycles and annual maintenance and those sort of things. So as you said, we're the point of the spear for getting an airplane in the air and keeping it in the air. And we want to make sure that safety is paramount throughout the entire process.
Yeah, it is such an important point, I think, to make. And you mentioned it being flight critical. The FAA guidance and the regulations around what people can do with different components of an aircraft, I think, make that so clear. As a licensed mechanic, I can do a complete major overhaul on an engine. I can tear the thing completely down. But what I can't do is open up a propeller. And right. There's a reason for that. And can you give me some examples as to why that is so flight critical that mechanics can't just open up a propeller, do an overhaul themselves?
Yeah, I mean it's pretty simple. You know, it's a specialized piece of equipment, right? That's type designed to perform a mission. And we have to make sure that as a propeller manufacturer, we're providing the manuals and the support for that propeller to be looked after through its entire life cycle. So when we talk about the value equation that we offer to customers, a lot of that goes into the manuals that we write and the overhaul criteria and overhaul timing that we dial into our propeller system. So again, everything that we do is that goes onto a certified airplane is a certified propeller application. On the Hartzell propeller side, even when we're installing on an experimental aircraft like a Vans or an RV, that still has a certified pedigree to it from a propeller system standpoint. So I think it's really important that, you know, as we care for the prop all through its life cycle, that we have special manuals, we have special criteria, we have a special set of overhaul guidelines that we own and publish to the overhaul community on the propeller side, the propeller MRO world. And we actually train the field, not just our own employees through our service center, but we actually train the field to care for our product. Because it is, as our chief pilot used to say, it's not a washing machine, right? When something breaks, you don't call the repairman and have it fixed. When something breaks, it's a bad day on a propeller. And we want to make sure that we have, you know, layers of safety built in, layers of quality built in, and layers of inspections and maintenance and overhaul cycles such that we don't have those opportunities for the bad day. So our manuals are really important to us. We update those quarterly or more often if needed, and we are publishing those to the field to Part 145 shops all over the world for them to go then and care for our product according to those manuals and processes and procedures. So you're right, an engine mechanic, you know, isn't technically qualified to work on a propeller, but it's also something that we're trying to make available to the field, again, in a safety culture type of environment where we want you as a customer to be able to go to a regional center of excellence to have your propeller worked on. We want you to have accessible MRO events such that you're not spending months of downtime because you had a prop issue. So mm-hmm. We're really interested in educating the field and making sure that there is a good training regimen and a high quality standard out there outside of just what we do in the factory from an overhaul standpoint. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because ultimately we need to have a really good educational cooperation between the frontline maintenance facilities out there, the folks like myself and others that are out there working on aircraft. So we really understand, so the right grease is used, so the props are not over greased, so things are maintained properly, so we know what to do in different situations, how to balance a prop dynamically, all these different types of things. But at the same time, I've been inside a prop shop. I would encourage anyone who's anywhere near one, if they can get a tour, to do that, because as you mentioned, it's so flight critical every component ends up with non-destructive testing. Every component gets specialized measurements and things that just can't have happen randomly out there in the field. And that's why we, as mechanics in the field, as opposed to a repair station, a propeller repair station, are not certified to actually open it up and reseal it or do something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So it's also, I mean, it's fascinating to me, I guess, how much goes into it. Tell me a little bit about the development process, because you guys have come out with quite a few new designs and new propellers. I've seen more come out of Hartzell. It's than maybe even you see coming out of the experimental world. Like, you are always coming out with a new prop, new application, something really cool, which I love seeing come from a certified products company. Tell me what goes into it, how this happens.
Well, you know, it starts with a really strong design with material properties that tend to outperform the competitive set, right? So carbon fiber, for example, or aerospace grade aluminum, we try to use the best materials available to us to design the propeller so that it outperforms and it performs at a high quality way. So that's kind of the first piece around our design philosophy. And then as far as getting to market, we really have what I call a three-legged stool. So we partner very high upstream with OEMs like Pilatus and Cirrus and Piper and Dyer and you know, Air Tractor and all these companies that are the leaders in general aviation in terms of aircraft production. We're partnering with them upstream so that we can type design for the mission, right? Cirrus wants to go fast, and you know, a Dyer wants to go fast, and an Air Tractor wants to be able to yank and bank and have great low end thrust. So we have the capability with our analytical tools and our engineering team to be able to design specific for the mission to achieve max performance. And so for us, the best combination at that OEM level is to partner with not only the airframer, but also the engine manufacturer, and then really develop an optimized system that's meeting the mission profile for that particular platform. So that's kind of the first leg of the stool. We're invested with our engineering team at the upstream level with our OEM and engine partners to design specific for the mission. Then when we think about the aftermarket and the installed base, we have our Top Prop program, which is a great collection of over 100 different STCs that we have, which really are new props going on to existing airplanes to make that airplane better in some form or fashion, whether that's low end takeoff and climb, like we do with the Trailblazer propeller across some different STCs that we have, or whether that's you know, high end performance on cruise, like we've done with some of our five blade composite STCs. We really, again, design for that particular airplane and what we know about the user base. And then we're able to STC that, again, through our own ODA with the FAA, and bring those props to market through our Top Prop portfolio. And then the third leg of the stool is really partnering with modifiers and customers out there like Whip Air, who have a great engineering department themselves and are really invested in growing the GA category and have a ton of know-how and knowledge around a particular platform, like the Caravan, for example, where they want to do the STC program themselves and bring that product to market. And so we provide to them a fully type certificated propeller that's approved for that airplane, and then they go do the test flying and get the STC and sell that STC into the market for that airplane. So really, you think about the partnership at the OEM level, that Top Prop portfolio of STCs that we bring to market, and then working with modifiers for them to fund and support STCs and bring to market. That's what I like to call the three-legged stool of how we bring props to customers.
Yeah, that's a good way of thinking about it. I like that. Now, how difficult is it to try to balance all the factors that you need to when you're designing a new propeller? Because my understanding is, you've got static thrust, climb performance, you've got cruise performance, you've got noise issues that you've got to deal with. I'm sure there's a cost factor, of course, and manufacturability that goes into it. There's probably a myriad of ones that I'm not even mentioning. How in the world do you weigh those and somehow come out with a winner? Like, this is the combination we're going to do.
Yeah, another a really good question. So we have some really solid analytical tools. The biggest, probably the most unique and proprietary to us is something that we call PropCode, which is a homegrown set of calculations that we can reference, which we're looking for inputs like horsepower and diameter and RPM, and then the shape of the airfoil we can change. We can also incorporate the blockage associated with the cowling or the inlet, those sorts of things. And so it'll spit out some thrust predictions that we found over time as we've honed the tools and honed the inputs to be pretty re highly reliable. And so that's kind of the first gate that we go through around the analytical tools to design a propeller. And then we can version it out. Again, we can, I like to say physics don't change, but we can certainly twist the knobs with the design to say, hey, we want to go faster. So let's put a little bit more twist or less twist into the blade. That's going to cause us maybe to lose a little bit of efficiency on low end takeoff and climb, but it's going to make it go faster when you get to cruise altitude. And so we can play around with these things analytically and make sure that we're dialing in our best possible design on paper. And then we've got, especially in the composite world where you're investing in a closed tool, a closed cavity tool, and really you're locking in your geometry before, you ever go and fly anything, it's really important to have pretty good fidelity in those analytical tools. So we spend a lot of time really making sure that tools are working well for us. And we gut check that within actual flight testing. So many times we'll go do a metal prototype of something that we're going to do in composite because we're able to cut a metal part, a metal blade, and test that out before we sink the tool for the composite production. But so as we transition then from the analytical tools, it's always great to go flight test and make sure that we're confirming those types of things and those types of performance metrics that we're going after. So, flight testing is super important to us. We have, excuse me, a flight test department of engineers that not only do performance flight testing, but they do vibrational survey flight testing. That's part one of the TC criteria and STC criteria is to make sure that our particular propeller is vibrationally approved on that particular airframe and engine combination. So that's one of the reports that goes into every FAA, TC, or STC for a propeller onto an airplane is a vibrational approval, as well as the flight testing to support the performance metrics of that particular platform. And then finally, on the composite side, we spend a lot of time looking at the fidelity and integrity of the blade design itself. Because whereas metal, it's a unique single structure piece of aluminum. In composite, you've got dozens of layers of carbon fiber laid up over a solid foam core, integrated into a stainless steel shank with a nickel cobalt leading edge. So you've got these different characteristics of materials you're using, and we need to make sure that the fatigue of pedigree of that blade will withstand what we call an unlimited cycle from a lifing point of view. So 70,000 type of flight hours is what the FAA calls unlimited life. And so we're as we look at bringing composite blades to market, we're not only looking at the airfoil, we're also looking at the construction of that blade to make sure that we've got, from a fatigue and allowable standpoint, an unlimited life blade. So I know I rambled a bit there, but there's a lot that goes into the science of the blade design using analytical tools, flight testing, and then a bunch of certification testing before we're ready to get to market.
No, I think that is exactly why it is such. It's funny you use the word science for it, which it certainly is, and yet I think of it as much science as I do as kind of the black arts of propeller design, because there seem to be such infinite number of variables involved. I almost wonder, and I'm curious about this, if you think, based on what you've seen during your tenure, of how you've learned that the model has to evolve to get better and better, if you think that now with AI and new data models and all sorts of other things that are coming, if you think that this is going to be an area that changes a lot, that the propellers that you see a decade from now from Hartzell may look different and perform even better.
I think it's possible, you know, on a couple of fronts, the analytical tools matched up then to verify via actual flight testing. I think that's, I'll come back to that in a second. But I also think from a material properties standpoint, so long as those boundaries are being pushed and we're innovating as a as an industry around material properties, whether it's, you know, a better, higher, stronger carbon fiber or some new type of layup process that enables us to maintain the structural integrity of the blade, but design even thinner leading edges or wider airfoils and still pass certification criteria. So material properties are certainly going to continue to evolve. So I think that will unlock some doors and open some paths to better performance. And then, as you said, you know, on the actual tools, I think one of the big breakthroughs has been CFD or computational fluid dynamics and understanding how airstreams created by a propeller move across the rest of the airframe, especially on, you know, a traditional tractor type of aircraft with the prop in the front of the airplane. And so I think that there's definitely some potential to version out some better performance based on continuing to model these airstreams and how we can limit the drag or reduce the drag of the airstreams across the fuselage and across the airframe with propeller geometry. You know, some of the other things we're looking at are how we can maximize air into the inlet, right? So the engine performs better and effectively churns out more horsepower. So there's all these things that we're continuing to look at and be curious about. And as the tools evolve and as, you know, we continue flight testing, I think for sure that's been our pedigree, to be honest, Jeff. That's what's made us successful is kind of that continual learning environment and wanting to get a little bit better tomorrow than we are today. So absolutely, I think we'll continue to push the boundaries.
I love that you are always pushing into that area because it seems to be one of the fastest evolving things that really affect performance on an aircraft. Now, obviously, one of the most dynamic parts of that been the introduction of the carbon fiber props, the navigator that we use in the Bonanza, all these other things. Do you see carbon fiber being the future? Will one eclipse the other? Will something actually get to the point? Or is it just, in other words, if it were a cost thing, then perhaps at some point cost would dynamic would change to make it possible for everyone? Or is it really that there's a different prop for a different situation?
You know, there's definitely different props and different materials for different situations. You know, I think the ag market, for example, is a really interesting and unique market that I believe is going to want to continue to utilize metal bladed propellers because of the risk associated with it, right? So you're doing a lot of yanking and banking, you're bringing in the risk of power lines quite frequently. And you know, a metal bladed propeller is just by definition going to be stronger and with able to withstand a line strike or a wire strike by cutting the wire and having, I'll say, usually non-catastrophic, you know, type of damage to the blades, right? I mean, you'll get it all twisted up and it's not a great day, but you don't see any shearing typically on the blade in that type of event. But if you're talking about a carbon fiber blade, you've got great strength vertically through the blade, but horizontally, if you strike a wire, there's, you know, quite the risk of that having some sort of a shear impact to the blade and, you know, maybe cutting the blade or gouging the blade pretty significantly. So I think just from a mission profile standpoint, there's certain applications and certain variants within GA that are going to want to continue to maintain, you know, metal as the preferred option.
Kind of
However,
like the survivability side of it in terms of like how they fail.
correct.
Case, yeah.
Yeah, failure modes for sure. However, I would offer you this. When I started at Hartzell 13 years ago, we were making, you know, of our total blade production, it was about 95% metal blades and less than 10% composite carbon fiber blades. Today, we are essentially 50-50.
Wow.
Still slightly skewed towards metal, maybe 60, maybe 55-45, but the trend has been very significant towards carbon fiber. And you know, I think it's a reflection of some of the benefits of those systems where you can add a blade, go from a four blade metal to a five blade carbon fiber, and actually still reduce your weight, but increase your performance threshold, right?
Right.
And so, you know, going from a three blade metal to a three blade carbon fiber, you're going to save weight. You're going to, you know, have a value equation that enables you to have an unlimited life propeller, where, you know, the big advantage of carbon fiber is it's got a higher acquisition cost out of the gate. But mm-hmm. when you go through an overhaul cycle, you're not grinding away metal, you're not grinding away carbon fiber, you're essentially not making that blade smaller, and you're not going to put it at risk for going under dimension and needing to be replaced. You're actually adding material back to it and restoring it to its factory new dimension through the overhaul cycle. So you've still got a great performing blade that is exactly within dimension of when it came out of the mold, and it's certified through our fatigue process to be an unlimited life, so you can continue to overhaul it. You know, we've got blades and props that have gone through a dozen overhauls in our some of our early models, and, you know, approaching, you know, tens of thousands of flight hours that continue to go back into service because, you know, they're being restored to factory dimension, and all the ultrasonic testing checks out fine. So a long-winded version of saying the market is shifting towards a carbon fiber type of persuasion, but there will definitely be, you know, some traditional and individual markets that are going to continue to go with metal bladed props.
There's a perception in the maintenance field that the aluminum, traditional aluminum blades are perhaps more susceptible to small damage, but more resilient to harder damage, like it hitting taking a nick on someone forgets to take the tow bar off when they go to start it or something like that, but also have a lot more field ability to do stuff in the field, versus composite not really eroding much in service, not, you know, being stronger for that, but less maintenance in there. But at the same time, if you do hit something, they're much more vulnerable to catastrophic damage. Is there any truth to that, or what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think it's very dependent on the situation, but what I would say in principle is that there's definitely a comfort factor with metal bladed props, right? You bring a file along with you, you file out, you know, the blemish or the nick or the scrape or the gouge, and you feel okay about going on your way. What I would say about carbon fiber is that the leading edge on that carbon fiber blade is where over 80% of any sort of impacts are typically occurring, right? And so you think about that nickel cobalt leading edge, it's 10 times stronger than aluminum. Mm. And so one of the things that a lot of our customers don't know is that when we paint those carbon fiber blades, we only leave about a half inch of that leading edge exposed. And so a lot of people think that that's all the wider it is, when in fact, our leading edges range from about an inch and a half to over 2 inches wide per side. So you're getting really, really good coverage with a nickel cobalt leading edge on a composite blade. And that is providing, you know, from a strength standpoint, 10 times better protection than a traditional metal blade would. So we see a lot of advantages even in, you know, the higher, dirtier runway scenarios where carbon fiber with the nickel cobalt leading edge is a preferred option. So I would say, you know, again, a comfort factor, many, many, many decades worth of experience with aluminum bladed props, and they hold up very well. And you're right, there is an ease to a field event where you can file that out. But on the composite side, we also have some pretty healthy allowables where, you know, if you're familiar with our manuals and familiar with those allowables, you can feel very comfortable very quickly with dressing that out in the field, right? With this minor carbon fiber, minor repair kit, and being on your way just like you would with a metal prop if you have something that needs addressed.
I've also been really impressed. My experience really does mirror what you just said, where you're with an aluminum prop, you're used to just doing a lot of filing. But you see, at the same time, you're used to doing it because it's happening all the time. Like you're always used to dressing up props. You're always used to getting those nicks. I had no idea that the nickel edge extended so far. I thought it was pretty much what's being shown through the paint. And that explains why there's so little wear that I've actually experienced, even on the blade face, which for those who are not familiar with the blade face, that's the part that kind of faces you in the cockpit on a tractor design, on a traditional design. And that's where you get so much abrasion from maybe small, tiny pieces that get picked up of sand and grit or things like that. And I've really been impressed at how little wear happens when it's a given with an aluminum blade that you're just going to have a rough face.
And on the composite blades, a lot of times what we find is, you know, there may be some superficial scratches or little dings, but it's not into the carbon fiber at all. And so you really don't have anything to worry about. You can touch that up with paint in many cases and be on your way. One of the other things that we do on our carbon fiber blades in many of the applications is we have a mesh erosion screen that we put outside of the carbon layers. Mm-hmm. And so we co-cure a mesh erosion screen that really absorbs all the way through, especially the outboard section of the blade, behind the leading edge. It absorbs and is able to kind of shield the blade from any of the more, you know, moderate type of FOD that you might see. So you might get something that gets through the paint layer and into the mesh erosion screen layer, and you might need to address that at an overhaul cycle, but that mesh erosion screen can be taken off and replaced through a normal composite overhaul.
Wow. Now, you, in addition to the certified work, Hartzell has done quite a bit, has a really, really storied history in one-offs, as you mentioned, the experimental world. You do a lot of work with air show performers, you know, like Sean D. Tucker, Mike Goulian, both friends of the show. Amazing work. But you actually did the propellers for Dick Rutan's and Burt Rutan's Voyager flight. Dick was on the show prior to him passing away. And he told the story a little bit about that. Can you tell me and reiterate some of how Hartzell saved the day for that flight?
Yeah, you know, Dick visited Hartzell probably 6 or 8 years ago. During one of our long service events, and told the story of the Voyager trip, and just had 350 Hartzell employees completely captivated for 2 hours while he went through the story. And you know, our part of that was that about 2 weeks before the flight, the flight where he circumnavigated the globe, he had a catastrophic prop failure with our competitors' props. So he didn't be able to handle the weight of the Hartzell prop, but gosh, I have had this failure and I need some help. And designed new mission specific props. You know, he was on his way. And we delivered them to him, and the rest is, as they say, history. So cool.
It is really amazing. And I know your connection broke up just for a second during that. So I just want to clarify that what he talked about is that he had this failure, and how quick was it? Because it was an amazing turnaround time that Hartzell was able to provide both front and rear propellers to the Voyager.
Yeah, it was essentially 10 days.
Wow.
So less than 2 full weeks from a Monday to the following Friday when we delivered the props.
That's amazing. One of the other things that I'm really happy about, really impressed by, so Hartzell has now, with the acquisition of Whirlwind Propeller, started to move into the area of experimental propellers as well. And in fact, one of the things everybody's going to get to see now is Hartzell's sponsoring with the Whirlwind 4-blade reproduction propeller here on our Mustang project. We're ready to do Firewall Forward, and so you're going to see that amazing reproduction propeller. And Whirlwind now being part of Hartzell, I think I was really fascinated by this move because, you know, propellers, as we mentioned in the beginning, are such a safety issue, such a performance, and there's so much engineering built into it. And the idea that you're going to take the kind of all the power of Hartzell propeller with engineering support, warranty support, technical support, and ongoing, you know, how do you keep these blades going, and be able to apply it now to advance an already good design with Whirlwind. Tell me a little bit about that move. Did we lose you, JJ? If someone could chime in and let me know if he is frozen for you or if it is just for me. JJ, are you there?
Picking up.
Now we've got you.
I am. I you just came back in. Sorry about that.
No problem. Did you get my question?
No, I just caught the bits and pieces about Whirlwind.
So if you could tell us a little bit about it seems like a wonderful opportunity now. I mentioned that obviously we're going to be using the Whirlwind reproduction 4 blade on the Mustang here, and Hartzell, with your acquisition of Whirlwind, is going to be taking all of the engineering types of resources, technical support, standardization, all these wonderful things that you use in the certified world, and applying it to help the experimental world as well. Tell me a little bit about what that means to Hartzell and to the market.
Right. So I think that first thing I'd say is, you know, Whirlwind comes with a very, very great pedigree in terms of the product and how it's performed in market and the brand organically. For us, we were really interested in partnering and acquiring that product line because it's a great complement to what we do on the certified side. And so, of course, Whirlwind is all experimental, which comes with its, you know, its own design criteria and philosophies without all the certified you know requirements, but for us, you know, we're deeply committed to really learning about the product portfolio and the advantages and the applications where it's a really good option, and continuing to grow that out on the commercial side and broadening the distribution to a wider consumer base. You know, I think for us, again, it's a great entrant into the fixed pitch ground adjustable side for carbon fiber. It's a really fun entrant into the airboat market for us, which we've never experienced before. And it's going to give us the opportunity to learn, you know, some things that we haven't experienced before in terms of how you design some of those lower end horsepower systems, but also then start to apply quality standards and overhaul criteria to this great product to make sure that we're again looking after it for through its full life cycle like we do with the Hartzell brand.
Yeah, I mean that's one of the coolest things now, because I take a very conservative approach into the experimental market, right? There's areas that as a builder you want to experiment in. And those should be areas that the builder is comfortable and the builder feels they have expertise or the resources for expertise in. And then there's other areas that you don't want to be experimenting if you're not qualified to, or if you don't have the resources to go. And very, very few people, if any, none I've met, have the resources to truly be experimenting with propellers and with propeller design. And so that seems like one that unless you are one of the very special breed that knows everything involved in that science and that art to keep yourself safe, we really need companies we can rely on to get propellers that we can rely on now, rely on into the future. And we know we'll be service and support as well as time goes by. And so that really seems like a great move for me. And also the fact that it gets you involved in things like Rotax aircraft, right? Rotax powered things.
Right. Yeah. First of all, if you are that rare individual that has everything figured out in terms of propellers, please call me. We're always looking to add talent to our company. That'd be a fantastic addition. But you're right. You know, the Rotax, there's over 50,000 airplanes in the market today in general aviation with Rotax engines, and we're on exactly this many of them, zero. And so, you know, the combination of Whirlwind on the experimental side, as well as a clean sheet design that we're working on as an entrant into the Rotax market, has us really excited, because not only are there 50,000 aircraft and engines out there already, but it's certainly a growing market. And you know, many traditional OEMs are now looking at Rotax as, you know, a potential lighter weight engine, lower horsepower option for some of their platforms. So certainly we think that's going to be an area of growth in the coming years for GA, and specifically on the lighter side.
Yeah, that will be really, really cool to see. And I can tell you, I've spent a fair amount of time with different manufacturers on that side, and it really ranges from people that you talk to that really do seem to know what they're doing, to people that you ask them questions about the propeller that they're selling for Rotax experimental, and their answer is like, it looked good. Like, it's all over the map.
Right.
And the idea that we will be seeing in the future a Hartzell branded propeller that you guys stand behind and say, this is why, and have your data, is pretty cool.
Yeah. In fact, we just shipped our first test hardware article to one of our strategic OEM partners to begin flight testing on the Rotax engine and airframe variant. And I'm so excited. It's just a beautifully designed three blade propeller. And I think it's going to be a great performer. And it certainly, as you said, carry that certified pedigree into this new market.
Absolutely. And I have to ask you something here. So we've talked about propeller design, and we've talked about all the different factors that go into it. Given all of that, given the fact that you're balancing noise and vibration and performance and climb and all these other things, at the same time, I have to say, when I come by and I look at especially the newer propellers, especially the carbon fiber propellers coming out of Hartzell, they are sexy as hell. I mean, when you're looking at these things on the ground, they look like they're going, you know, 300 miles an hour on the ground. Is there some level that of how the thing looks that factors into your designs?
Oh, absolutely. I would say, you know, 20 years ago, not so much. We were known for, you know, paddle style, you know, type of blades that looked very, I'll say, utilitarian might be the best word for it. But, you know, with the advent of, you know, again, the evolution of our design tools, certainly dialing in performance and ramp appeal, you know, aesthetics is part of the mission, right? I mean, a lot of the folks that are in the prop market are doing it because they want something that looks cool and, you know, is might have a cool name associated with it, or it provides some performance benefits. So yeah, certainly ramp appeal and aesthetics are go into every design that we put out there.
I'm glad to hear it does, or I guess it could be either way. But it is so true. I counsel people a lot on what propeller to buy for their aircraft when they've decided it's time to either upgrade or when there's a problem with the propeller that they currently have on. And the factors I have them look at considering in that regard, certainly there's performance. There's always going to be cost to some degree associated with it. They've got to look at all of that. But I feel like they often miss what's involved in maintenance and owning that. And so we do talk a lot about who can service it. Will they be able to service it in a sort of a piecemeal fashion? Meaning, do you have the resources to only fix what's wrong when you need to? Because not all companies are cooperative about that, and Hartzell's really, really good about it with supporting all the shops that are out there. And then also at the end of the day, you probably spend more time looking at your plane on the ground than you do in the air. And yeah, it's cool. If you're going to spend a big chunk of your life savings on a prop, it is cool to be able to look at it and have it be beautiful.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You spend a lot more time looking at it on the ramp or in the hangar than you do, you know, in the air. So certainly, yeah, ramp appeal and designing for the, a bit of that cool or sexy factor is important.
And before we move on to that last kind of topic of looks and naming, I don't want to have missed hitting the point of that maintenance side. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because I have found as a mechanic in the field, this is becoming more and more of an issue throughout the entire industry, where when someone has a singular issue, meaning no known issue except for one of the blades is starting to leak out or something. And they're more and more finding themselves up against a wall where prop shops are sometimes just saying, that's great, but we don't touch anything. We just overhaul. Like, that's it.
Yeah.
Or parts aren't available or something like that, which can drive what could be a very reasonable repair to something really, really expensive. And tell me about Hartzell's approach to this.
Yeah, I mean, looking after product in the market is one of the ways we differentiate or try to differentiate versus our competition. So you mentioned parts availability. We ship over 90% of our aftermarket orders the same day or next day that we receive them, if that's what the customer wants, right? So we carry inventory that goes all the way back to the 50s and 60s. For platforms and products that we want to make sure we have product on the shelf for when we get those phone calls and when a customer may have an issue. And, you know, the next piece of it is a kind of the next line of defense for us is our tech support team. So we have 6 full-time tech reps that will answer your phone calls 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or call you back within 10 minutes if they don't answer the phone off hours. And you know, we back that up with a really strong warranty program. So every top prop comes with a warranty through first overhaul. So anything, like you said, any sort of maintenance where it's a manufacturer defect or something that's going wrong, we're going to stand behind the product all the way through the first overhaul cycle, which is, you know, 4, 5, 6 years down the road.
Yeah.
So I think that's really important. And then if you're prop to us for service, we're gonna give you a 2-year warranty on that service, that MRO event. And so, you know, I would say, you know, first line of defense is putting a good quality product out in market. Second line is calling our tech support team and working through our warranty program if there is an issue. And third line is, you know, get it into one of our service centers. We now have several locations across the U.S., not just in Piqua where our headquarters is, but we also have factory-owned locations at Tiffin, Ohio, American Propeller Service in Redding, California, and then Texas Aircraft Propeller down in the Houston area. And so we've got great facilities across the country. We want customers to be able to source locally and regionally, again, so they can minimize their downtime.
Yeah. And the other thing I want to mention,
I would say the next line of defense is what we call our recommended service facilities.
Got it.
And our recommended service facilities are our shops that we go out and audit every several years, sure they're upholding our standards and abiding by our quality manuals, and are really extensions of our factory service from a quality standpoint.
Well, I really do appreciate, and I think it's important how dedicated you are to supporting the end customer there and you know, not taking advantage of them in that regard, just trying to support them as best possible. And one last technical point I want to make there, because I've faced this also a lot personally with many customers and supporting other people out there on something, a perfect example of your design supporting the market and safety and reliability would be, I've written several articles on, for example, Continental engines and issues with starter adapters, starters, kickback, things like that. And it all comes down to, in many cases, the propellers testing and design to meet moment of inertia minimums. And there, this is an area where you can buy a propeller, you can buy a lightweight propeller for an aircraft that doesn't meet those requirements and find yourself at risk of kickback damage, of damage to your engine, damage to your starter adapter. And without a doubt, even with Hartzell's composite lighter weight propellers, I did a lot of research with you guys. You always meet those specs to make sure people don't have to face that.
Yeah, I think it's a, I appreciate you bringing that up. It's a really good point, Jeff. We certainly design not only for the mission profile of the airplane, but also the limitations of the engine or the engine requirements, let's say. And in some cases with Continental, you have to have a minimum polar moment of inertia, or to your point, you have the risk of harming your engine with too light of a flywheel system. Rotax has some limitations on the heavier side that we're managing against as we design props for Rotax. So the point is, we pay attention. We don't want to invalidate your engine warranty or your, you know, anything associated with something that might cause engine damage. So again, that's one of the things that we do that differentiates us, is that we're designing, whether it's through a TC with the OEM or via STC into our top prop portfolio or supporting a modifier, we're going to make sure that we are abiding by all the engine specs when we have a prop established for a particular platform.
Yep. Well, it's absolutely fantastic. And as we are now approaching the top of the hour, I want, if you will bear with me, I want to do a little bit of a game here, have some fun for everybody. You let me know off air something I had no idea. I knew all these named propellers with these cool names out there. I did not realize that there was a connection between the naming of the propeller, at least coincidentally, I don't know, you'll tell me if it's coincidental or it's intentional. And let's just say the SUVs, minivans, things like that, there's an automotive connection to the naming of your props. So I want to play a little game here. The game here is
purely
called
coincidental. Yeah.
Did you say, what's that?
Purely coincidental, but still funny. Yeah.
Purely coincidental. All right. Let's see how coincidental this is and if our audience believes this is coincidental. Because here's the game. It's called Name That Propeller.
You got it.
Start right now. Okay. You ready?
Yep.
JJ Friggy, this is you on Social Flight Live with the game Name That Propeller. And we are going to start with this.
Come on, that's a Trailblazer.
That's right. That is correct. That is the Trailblazer propeller from Hartzell. Correct. Absolutely. Okay. Next propeller. Name that propeller.
That's the Pathfinder.
That is correct. That is the Hartzell Pathfinder propeller. A beautiful one, as you see here. On it looks like a carbon cub, something like that, that's on. That is a cool looking propeller, I will say. Absolutely. Okay.
There is.
Next up, name that propeller.
That's the Explorer. That's what I drive,
right.
Jeff. Come on.
That is the Hartzell Explorer.
The Explorer, propeller. Jeff. That's what I drive.
That's right. Okay, next up here. Yep. Name that propeller.
You got it. Ooh, that's your prop. That's the Navigator.
That is. That's right. And that's our aircraft. That is
that's your prop, Jeff. That's the Navigator.
Navigator, yeah. Composite propeller available for Beechcraft Bonanzas and I'm sure many other aircraft. Damn sexy looking propeller, if I do say so. Okay, here's another one. Name that propeller.
That's one of the newest. That's the Yukon.
Absolutely. As we mentioned, Whip Air's STC for caravans, the Yukon, this thing, oh my God, the specs that they talked about, what this changes in jumping off the water, they literally were going to call this something else that had to do with just ripping out stumps, but it is a fantastic propeller. Okay. As we continue
Listen,
to roll
20...
along.
Right.
Here we go.
Go ahead.
Name that propeller.
that's going to be one of our newest ones. That's the Town and Country.
No, that's the Voyager. Oh,
Fair enough.
I finally got you on one. I couldn't believe it. Okay. We got that. That is it. That's a beautiful propeller with a heck of a picture there.
Yeah.
Here we go. Name
Yeah,
that
that's the
propeller.
Odyssey. That's the Odyssey on the Diamond DA40NG.
Oh.
Oh, sorry, on the Cirrus SR22T, excuse me. Yeah.
There we go. That's right. Now you can't tell me this is a coincidence. This is we've got more. We're not done. All right. How about this one?
Oh my goodness. What is that? Show me
That
the airplane.
is an Eagle Talon
Ah, there you go.
from the
Okay.
1990s. I knew I
Good
could
for
find
you.
one.
Yeah, no doubt. That's one of our newest STCs, not quite in market yet, on the Gamebird GB1 aerobatic airplane.
So cool. Okay, so I know this next one is not official, but you have a new propeller out, two blade composite propeller from Mooney Aircraft. For all you Mooney guys out there, all you folks, you're gonna want this. So two blade composite propeller. You've got it down to a list of, I think, five that you have people voting on.
Yep.
And
Yeah, it's
so I
in
want to
flight
put in
testing
my
right
vote.
now. Yep. Yep.
What's it down to?
You're right. Top five choices are right out
Okay.
on our social media right now. You can go check it out and vote for your preferred name.
Okay, so I'm putting my vote in, and there's my vote.
You got it.
My vote is the
Don't
Dodge
stop
Journey.
believing, Jeff. That's
I
the
want to
journey.
see it named the Journey.
I
All
do too.
right,
That's a that'd be a
and
great
here's the
name for
last
it.
one. I wanted to put one in for the wish list. So this is what I want to see for the, whoops, I put the wrong thing up there. That's the prop. That's the prop for the Journey, right? If I win, if it becomes
Yep,
the
you
Journey.
bet.
And then
That's right.
here's my wish list for one here. You mentioned earlier, we need a Hartzell prop called
Yeah.
the Town and Country. I'm thinking something like this that could hang in people's offices.
There you go. There you go. Looks good. Look at that brass leading edge. That's fantastic.
It's a bit of a difference, a bit of a breakaway from composite. It technically is composite in design, I suppose. Multiple
Yeah.
materials.
You bet. Yeah. Yeah. Too
Well,
funny.
JJ, thank you so much for taking time to join us here tonight on Social Flight Live. It's been absolutely fascinating. I am grateful for everything that Hartzell does for general aviation, your support of the industry, your support of Social Flight. There's going to be a lot more to come where we're going to show people a lot more, especially with that new prop for the Mustang. There's going to be so many cool things coming. And I just want to say thank you for taking time to join us here on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Jeff. I really enjoyed spending the hour with you and certainly had some fun along the way and just really appreciate what you're doing for the industry as well, or educating around safety and all these things that make GA a great experience for so many. So thanks for what you're doing as well.
You are very, very welcome. I look forward to seeing you next week at NBAA. You always have a heck of a showing out there.
Yeah, it's going to be great. Stop by and see us. We're in the main display area and can't wait to chat with customers and both of our products as well as our OEM aircraft partners and engine partners. So it's going to be a great week and looking forward to being there.
You got it. Have a wonderful evening.
All right, you too. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks. Good night. And thanks to all of you for taking time out of your evening to join us here on Social Flight Live. We're off next week for NBAA. We will bring you some content from the show with all new announcements, very cool things happening out there. And then we are back on October 29th with Delphine Tedeschi, a real Rosie the Riveter, joining us here on the show. She is 99 years young. Cannot wait to introduce you to her. And it is just going to be another wonderful show. Until next time, I'm Jeff Simon for Social Flight, and I wish you all blue skies.